Welcome to episode 137 of the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone who doesn't drink alcohol, and I spend every waking moment helping other people do the same. So I have a little drink of my green mint tea. I'd just been listening to some Spotify before I came on here, and Playing With Knives by Bizarre Inc. came on. I don't know if any of you remember that little dance track. It was one of those songs, you know, back in the day when I used to drink, when I'd have this playlist that I would put on. And I'd really rank it up like super, super loud, so all the neighbors would be banging on the door, but I could never hear them. And I would get absolutely blotto out of my mind, jumping around, dancing to the music. And I know some people struggle with that. They listen to some music and it kind of triggers this desire to drink alcohol. I just wanted to share with you one of the beauties, one of the benefits of what we do at the Truth About Alcohol is we don't just help people become people who don't drink alcohol. You know, we don't just do that. That's you can get that a dime a dozen anywhere. What we do at the Truth About Alcohol is we help people become people who don't drink alcohol and never crave alcohol, okay? And when that happens, when a song like Bizarre Inc. comes on, you can have a real nice warm memory of that moment of you dancing around the bedroom, having a good laugh, and you don't have to associate with alcohol, okay? It's just, wow, do you remember the time when I used to dance around to this song? And then if you want, crank it up as loud as you can and dance around with it. You do not need the alcohol. And in that moment, the value or the perceived value back in the day would be, wow, I really need alcohol in order for me to enjoy this song and dance around. When in truth, the value is in the song. The value is in what the song does to the chemical structure of your body and how it makes you feel and the movement. That is the value. The dance and the music is the value. That is the entertainment, okay? Alcohol detracts you from those valuable qualities. It reduces the quality of the entertainment. It reduces your memory of the experience. How could that be a good thing, right? Anyway, just wanted to share that with you as we started out. So today's episode is going to be being a zealot or zealot. I don't even know how you say it. It's not a word that I use that often. So if it's not a word that you use, what is a zealot? Well, a zealot is someone effectively who likes to kind of like go about banging on about how some change or something they believe in is super duper important to them, champion a cause, so to speak. Back in the day, long before I decided to tackle the alcohol issue, smoking was the big thing for me. And when it comes to like being a zealot, people would say things like, there's nothing worse than an ex-smoker, right? Because, you know, one minute you're sitting in a dingy little pub, but you can't even see the person next to you who's 10 inches away because of all the smoke, and you're not really caring about it. You're actually contributing to it. And then the next day you quit, and then you go in there and you're like, oh my God, look at all the smoke in here. Oh, everybody stinks. This is really bad. Don't you know you're all killing yourself? And people would say, wow, there's nothing worse than a smoker than an ex-smoker, because all of a sudden you're complaining about things you never used to complain about. And people find that quite hypocritical, or at least we think that they find that hypocritical. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Why am I talking about it? Well, Annie Grace just talked about this on this Naked Mind podcast. She had a reader question. Somebody said, how can I give me some advice on how I can not be so much of a zealot now that I have stopped drinking alcohol, because this person didn't want to, you know, get in the face and bug her friends and family, I guess. So I don't have readers' questions. Nobody sends me a question. I don't ask them for it. So I'm just going to pinch Annie's. And I was just listening to a podcast and I thought to myself, I have a few things to say about this topic, which not necessarily goes the same way as the advice that Annie gave or the advice that normal people would give, actually. I like to listen to something, you know, a point of view and think to myself, you know, is there a contrarian view here that nobody or not many people are talking about, which I can talk about, which can touch a few people? So that's what I'm going to do. Okay. So first of all, Annie talked about respect. So Annie talked about how important it is if you're going to talk about alcohol and bang on about the fact that you've just given up drinking and how much of a poison it is, et cetera, et cetera, is to do this like in a respectful way. Okay. And I agree with that. You know, I agree with it, but I don't agree with managing this in a respectful way just because it's alcohol Okay. I think if we're going to be effective communicators, and I actually believe that the opposite of addiction is communication or good communication, and bad communication leads to addiction, right? So I believe strongly that if you want to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, then one of the key things you need to do is try to become a world-class communicator or as best a communicator as you can, okay? So for me, being very cognizant of the different subjects and topics that you're going to talk about in and around the people you're talking about them with, and doing that in a very respectful and tactful way, it's just a sensible thing to do. I know that my mother and father, for example, voted for Brexit. All right. Why? I don't know. They're old school. This is Britain. We're Britons. Keep every other fucker out of our country. Right. Why? It's because their entire worldview is shaped by a newspaper that arrives on the doorstep every morning and a television that's in front of them and the local pub where everybody is attuned to the same kind of stimuli, right? So if that world that they're looking at is saying to you, keep all the polls out because some Polish person shat in the London streets, or that, they've raised that to me, or they're taking all our benefits away and sending it back to Poland to their family, then they're going to develop the view that they should get rid of all foreigners, right? So when I'm in and around my mum and dad, I know that I have to be really respectful or tactful about how I'm going to talk about these issues, because I know it could develop into World War III. And what I mean by that is I would get very aggressive, not my mum, not my dad. I would get very aggressive and start dominating and upsetting people because their views go completely opposite to mine. So you have to be quite respectful about it. It's not a topic of conversation that I will talk about with my parents because there's no real point talking about it with them because it would just, just lead to doom and gloom, right? So you have to be a little bit respectful about this, but just do it in the sense of, alcohol is just another part of something that you are just kind of like respectfully talking about. You know, you might really want to talk about sex. You might really be suffering from erectile dysfunction. You might have thrush. You might have, you might be bleeding from the anus, right? You might want to try to eat human flesh. I don't know, any kind of taboo you can think of. You want to talk to someone about it, but you don't really know how to talk about it. You know that the norms that we create in society have certain rules around them, and you don't kind of step over that line, do you, with certain people? You wait until you know that it's safe for you to actually talk about these things. So I would say when it comes to the respect, it's sensible. Annie's right there. So we need to be respectful. And I want you to be really mindful of what, as I talk today, not to think black and white. I don't want you to say later on, oh, Lee said that we should be respectful and we shouldn't talk about these things because he doesn't talk to his mum about politics. That's not how I want you to take this. I want you to think in shades of gray. There is no black and white of whether we shouldn't or shouldn't talk about it. There is sometimes we should talk about it. Let me be very clear about that. We should talk about our decision to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. But there are very the answer of how we do that is not black and white, is what I'm saying. It's shades of gray, all right? The one thing I do want you to think about when it comes to respect is this isn't a one-way street, okay? What tends to happen is people have an issue with alcohol. They come to places like this, Naked Mind, or Hello Sunday Morning, or Soberistas, or One Year No Beer, or The Truth About Alcohol, because they're starting to think that alcohol is an issue for them, and then they stop, right? And now all of a sudden, we think because we've stopped that there's something wrong with us, that our decision to stop is strange, that we're somewhat different, that we're not normal. And a craving will kick in, which is really just resistance, that says, well, I want to be normal. I want to feel like I'm part of the tribe again, right? Now, when it comes down to respect, what I want you to think about is this. Is it normal to not drink a powerful poison that kills 3.3 million people a year and is one of the causal factors in over 200 illnesses and diseases, right? Or is it normal to drink it? Well, in our society, particularly in the UK where I live, it is normal to drink it because everybody does drink it. But it's not really normal, is it? Normal in the sense of biologically, our body will repel ethanol because it is a poison. So really, when you drill down to it, it's not normal. So the people who are drinking alcohol are the ones who are not normal in this situation, but they've been psychologically hoodwinked by our norms and our societal conditioning. The belief system, as I call it, alcoholism, the invisible, violent, and dominant belief system, it's got them in their grips, right? So as and when these people are around us, so let's just say, for example, Marjorie has just decided that she no longer wants to drink alcohol, and she's on day three, and day three happens to be a Friday night, and she's really nervous, and she's biting her nails, and she's on Strive, and she's posting, people help me, I'm going out with a girls' night out for the first time this weekend. And then she goes out, and all the girls know that she's trying not to drink. And all they do all the way leading up to the night is bang on about how great it's going to be, how wonderful it's going to be to get hammered, how fantastic it's going to be to drink the fucking tits off. And then during the night, they consistently ask you for a drink. They keep saying, why don't you drink? Just have one, just tonight, blah, 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 and on and on and on. Is that being respectful? Okay, what I'm saying here is, yeah, we have to be respectful, but just be a little bit mindful that the people who drink alcohol are not being respectful. I mean, I would even drill down to, let's say I take my kids to a party. Let's say it's another children's party, and all of a sudden someone is walking around drinking beer or wine in front of my kid. Is that really respectful? Well, I don't think it is, right? But that person would think that it is totally normal and acceptable. All right. Well, I think it's totally normal and acceptable to not drink alcohol and to talk about the fact that I don't drink alcohol. All right. So what I'm getting at here is, don't beat yourself up and think that you have to keep your mouth shut because you have somehow made the contrarian decision here, and the contrarian decision is not right. Our decision not to drink alcohol is almost definitely the right one. There's no way around this. Okay. The people who decide not to stop drinking, good for them. It's up to them, okay? But just be very mindful of the act of drinking and what comes out of that, i.e. their unruly behavior, etc., etc., and the influence it has on our children is not very respectful at all, particularly if you're trying to quit drinking alcohol and the resistance is at work trying to get you to drink. The more and more people make you feel uncomfortable and try to get you not talking about it, the more likely you are going to drink. So that's my little two pennies worth on resistance. Have a little drink of tea. I want to talk about apology a little bit. Annie spoke in her piece that she is a zealot. She said, I'm a zealot. Of course she is. She's wrote a book about it. She's in Denver at the moment talking to a convention of people about it. She talks on a podcast about it. She blogs about it. She has training courses. Her whole life is alcohol, right? Of course she's a zealot or a zealot, whatever. So am I, right? So she apologizes to her friends. She said on there, I apologize to my friends because when I stopped drinking, all I did was bang on about it, all right? I'm saying here, don't apologize to your friends, all right? Please don't apologize. I think sinking into that modus operandi, that framework of thinking that says, oh, I stepped out of line because when I stopped drinking, I tried to help everybody else and I really pissed everybody off and got their noses out of joint, and apologizing to them or apologizing to yourself or the world about that is the wrong way of thinking, I believe. And I've been exactly where Annie is. I've apologized wholeheartedly to a whole host of people about the way that I behaved and talked about alcohol in the aftermath of me stopping drinking. Why shouldn't we apologize? Well, come on, you know. We are the people who do not drink alcohol. We're in one side of the ring. On the other side of the ring are the people who do drink alcohol. And it's very unusual for the people at the other side of the ring not to ask us to drink alcohol, even when we don't want to drink alcohol. If I go back to the Valley and I meet up with my mate Skit in a pub, I can guarantee you after 9 years of not drinking, Skit will still ask me if I want to drink. Now, I don't have any cravings to drink alcohol anymore, so I can just simply turn around and say, Scott, I run a company that helps people not drink. Why would I drink? I keep telling you this every single time, and I can make a joke out of it, right? But to some other people, when Scott says, do you want to drink? You're going to drink because you're triggered to drink, and you have a really strong set. You know, the resistance is really strong with you, right? So when they turn around and say to you, do you want to drink? That, to me, could be construed as being out of order and almost something that warrants an apology. The opposite of that is when you quit drinking alcohol because you see that it ruins lives and fucks you up in a myriad number of ways. And then you go to your friend who is equally as fucked up and you say to them, hey, I think I can help you here, right? I don't drink alcohol anymore and I feel absolutely fantastic. Do you want my help? Why are we apologizing for that? I'm going to stick my fit. No, I'm not. I'm trying to get out of this, actually. I was going to say I'm going to have a guess or I'm going to have a punt. No, I'm not going to do that. I think it's bad form. I'm just going to concentrate on my own personal experience. When I first stopped drinking in 2009, I had two groups of friends. I had one group of friends. They were just people who drank lots of alcohol, all right? But as I moved on in life and I met people who didn't drink that much alcohol, I didn't feel that it was necessary for me to tell them and go into a great spiel about why they should stop drinking alcohol because they're not even drinking that much. So the only time we actually raise it is when we're talking to someone we believe needs our help. Why are we apologizing for trying to save the lives of our friends, okay? So please don't apologize about it. Please, please, please don't apologize about it. And here's why. Whenever I talk to my friend Matt, okay, all Matt ever does is talk about poker. That's all he talks about. It's poker, poker, poker. No, I like poker, all right? But I like to talk about other things, but not Matt. All he just does is talk about poker all the time. Why? Because he loves poker. And I have to accept that that's Matt, right? Matt loves his poker, so that's what he's going to talk about. Because as human beings, when it comes to having conversation, a lot of us are very, very suffer from a bit of low self-esteem. We don't really know what to talk about. It doesn't come natural to us, particularly as modern technology takes us further and further away of having one-to-one conversations. So anything that we're interested in, that we have a common bond, we'll talk about a lot, right? And it's no doubt about it that if you live in the UK or Australasia or the US, you have a strong common bond with alcohol with everybody, right? So Matt talks about poker all the time because he loves it. Right now, in this particular moment, whenever Liza talks to me, all she talks about is K-pop. She's absolutely fascinated about K-pop. And I couldn't give a shit about K-pop. But when she keeps talking about it and banging on about it, okay, I know that if I just totally ignore her and say, Liza, I really don't give a shit about K-pop, that's not really playing the game, is it? I have to turn around and say to Liza, oh, okay, tell me more about this K-pop that you're interested in, right? Because I have to show a bit of an effort to be interested in what Liza's in because I have chosen that she's going to be part of my inner circle, okay? Some of you might know that I was doing this year, well, still am doing the year of fear, of facing my fear. And one of the fears that I faced was to accept an invitation to be part of a religious group, a Christian group called The Gathering, who, are a community. Want to do good in the world, want to help people who are really struggling. It's a fantastic group of people. And I joined a WhatsApp group, okay? And all the Gathering talk about on the WhatsApp group is love and community and friendship, but it's all intertwined and linked to God and Jesus, okay? Now, I am not religious. I don't believe in God as a deity. I don't have much of a thought about Jesus either, right? But when I keep reading streams of people talking about God and Jesus on my WhatsApp, so it pops up on my mobile phone all the time, I don't really like it that much. But I can understand why they're doing it. They're doing it because they are really invested in it and they love it and their faith is super important to them because it helps them get through really tough times. And they believe that their faith, because it helps them, will help other people. So they're committed to the end of their days to try to convert people into Christianity, all right? But I removed myself from that WhatsApp group the other day because I didn't want to be in that conversation anymore. But I don't think that they should stop talking, but I can remove myself from that conversation. That is me taking responsibility. Okay, I'm not saying to the Gathering, stop talking about religion, stop talking about God and Jesus and faith, because I can see what they're doing is saving lives, but I don't want to be a part of it. So when I'm talking about alcohol all the time, I'm saving people's lives. And if someone doesn't want to listen to that, then step out of the conversation. Don't tell me to stop talking about it, okay? And last but not least, every time I talk to my boy, all he talks about is Hugo Boss or Armani or lots of other things, because that is what makes Jude comfortable. That is what he is interested in, right? So again, what I'm getting at here is, as human beings, it's natural for us to talk about those things that we're really deeply into. And if you're not deeply into alcohol when you're trying to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, then there's something wrong. It's very likely that you're not going to reach your goal. because you need to be absolutely immersed in it in order for you to change those neurological connections that tell you that alcohol is normal and pleasurable, and then change them to say that alcohol is nothing but a poison that kills 3.3 million people a year. And that alcoholism is not a byproduct of drinking alcohol. Alcoholism is a belief system which is invisible, dominant, and violent. All right? So no apology, please. I need another drink. Take it slow. Maybe I should take it slow sometimes when I'm talking. Annie says we should take it slow when it comes to talking to people. And I agree with this, right? And the reason I agree with this is through my own mistakes in the past, not necessarily linked with alcohol. This is what I do regularly. And it's a fault and failing of mine. Maybe you'll see a bit of yourself in it, maybe not. I have a terrible habit of reading a book. A book will tell me one thing, and then I will go into the world and try to tell people that one thing is the greatest thing on earth before I have a full command of that knowledge. I get so excited and so swept away by a revelation or an epiphany that I've had in my life that I want to share it with people. Now, why is that? Well, one, I want to help people, obviously. Two, I also think that there is a part of ego involved in that. I think that one of the things that we do as human beings is we like to show people that we know stuff. If people can see that we know stuff, then we become valuable to that tribe, which is almost like a biological instinct of a human being. Because if you're not valuable to the tribe, then you'll be ostracized from it and you'll be alone and your life expectancy will reduce. Your likelihood of finding a mate and procreating will reduce. I'm talking very animalistic here, but these are kind of the subconscious things that go on, right? So for me, you have to be aware that it's partly your ego that is saying, I just want to tell everyone that I don't drink alcohol anymore, because you're basically, if you think about the spreading of your genes, you're basically saying to someone, I don't drink alcohol. So if I have a baby, okay, the likelihood of that baby drinking alcohol or being addicted is very less likely because I don't do it. That means that, you know, you should mate with me, right? So I think it's really important. And having command of your knowledge, why is that really important? If you jump on a podcast, listen to me say that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system. Go home tonight, go into the kitchen, see your husband sat by the kitchen table drinking a beer, and turn around and say to him, do you know what, Henry? Alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system. And he says, oh yeah, tell me more about it. You're likely to fuck it up, right? You're likely to not know what you're talking about because you're not in command of your knowledge. Why is that important? It's important because the person who is drinking alcohol wants to continue drinking alcohol. Also, it's equally important to know that the person who doesn't want to drink alcohol 99.9% of the time at the beginning of this journey also really wants to drink alcohol. All right, let's not kid ourselves here, okay? We're not quitting drinking because we think alcoholism is a visible and violent dominant belief system, all right? We would have quit drinking 20 years ago. We're quitting drinking because we're addicted to it and it's fucking us up and we can't stop. And the reason we're addicted to it and we can't stop is because we absolutely love it, because it provides us with all these values. So while this guy is sat by the bar having a drink and you tell him that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system, and he doesn't want to quit drinking, he's quite happy where he is, you also really want to drink. So now when he starts questioning you on this and you haven't got the answers to back up your theory that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system, I can tell you that he will be pulling arrow after arrow out of his quiver of reasons why drinking is fucking brilliant and reasons why sobriety is not, and he will be shooting them into your heart one after another, boom, 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 Rambo style, and one of them will blow up and you will end up drinking alcohol because you will see his side of the argument. The resistance is always trying to get you to drink alcohol. And one of the ways it does that is by saying to you in your mind, when someone says to you, really, alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system? Well, I read on the internet the other day that drinking red wine actually saves your life and that people who are sober are more likely to die than people who drink, okay? The resistance latches onto those comments and says in your mind, wow, Henry, this guy has got a point. You should drink alcohol, all right? So be aware of that. Take it slow and get a good command of your knowledge. And this is why the truth about alcohol, life-changing experience, is so important, folks. It's 3 months long for a reason. A lot of people say to me, wow, late 3 months is a big commitment. Surely we should make it shorter time. Hang on, we're trying to change 20 to 30 years of neurological connections. Maybe 3 months isn't long enough. And it isn't long enough, right? I had a podcast episode with the TTAA moderator, Laurie Seguin, yesterday. And Laurie said, you know, I don't drink alcohol anymore. It's a long time since I've done a life-changing experience anymore. But the reason I've become a moderator is I can see this is a lifetime gig, that I've only just started to unpeel the onion. I've only just started to realize who I really am, how I've been behaving, where my boundaries are weak, and my eyes are watering. I need to do something about it. It's the truth about alcohol is a gig for life. We're here for life, right? So 3 months of your time on the life-changing experience is pittance, really. It's just, that's just the part of the program where you're working together, doing your own work. I mean, the much broader work comes in the Strive community beyond that. The other thing that Laurie said to me, which is really important when it comes to taking it slow and having a command of your knowledge, is she says, when I asked her, you know, what was going on for you? What were these issues? Why did you feel the need to drink, the compulsion? Why couldn't you stop? She said, you know what? Until I did the life-changing experience, I didn't have the words to define how I felt. So not only doesn't she have the words or the framework to define how she feels to other people, she can't even figure it out, or she couldn't figure it out, to define it to herself. So when the resistance is having that internal dialogue to her, calling her ugly and miserable and stupid and worthless and pathetic, she does not have the words or the framework to be able to fight back, because she can't work it out on her own. But by coming to Strive and the truth about alcohol, learning about the truth about alcohol and the life-changing experience, she then develops that framework, she develops those words, and she can now fight back against the resistance internally, okay? So taking it slow is a really good, important thing. Because if you don't have command of your knowledge, it can really weaken your position, all right? I'm going to talk about the death effect a little bit. I want you to be aware. The death effect, we cover this on the life-changing experience, so I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but the death effect, let me give you a story on how the death effect works, okay, to demonstrate it. So have anyone heard of Rich Roll, all right? So Rich Roll is a guy who in his 40s, actually, I don't know when he stopped drinking, but it was late in his life. He was a super duper athlete when he was a youngster, particularly swimmer. Then he started drinking like everybody else does in the world. He basically turned into a fat slob. And one day he's walking up the steps and he's out of breath and he's thinking to himself, I'm going to have a fucking heart attack if I keep drinking. He ended up going to Alcoholics Anonymous. He got clean. And then after getting clean, he turned into one of the fittest people in the world in his 40s. He became like an ultra marathon guy, right? Ultraman, you know? And he developed his own brand. He's got his own podcast. You should check it out. He's vegan now. His wife's vegan. I was going to say it's a good show then. I know it gets on my nerves a little bit, but I used to really love it, right? So Rich Roll was telling a story on his podcast how he stood up at this convention and he was talking about how important it is to live a vegan lifestyle. So he's talking about how important it is to live a vegan lifestyle. And then after, during the break, he goes into the canteen to have some food, or the restaurant area to have some food, right? And this restaurant area, even though he's talking about veganism on stage, it's not completely vegan. He's got options there for vegans, vegetarians, and meat eaters, right? So Rich is there, and he's talking away to this guy behind, and now this guy behind him comes up to him and says, wow, you blew me away, Rich, that the stuff you talked about veganism, the way that you talked about how eating animals really affects the world at large and our health and how much damage it's doing to our planet, it blew me away. It was so life-changing. Rich, I just want to thank you for it. And then the person turns around and says, do you want meatloaf or steak? And Rich rolls like, I'll have meatloaf. And then the guy behind him, he's just told Rich that his veganism thing has changed his life. The woman says to him, do you want meatloaf or steak? And the guy says, I want steak. Okay, now that is a classic example of the death effect, and you see it in alcohol all the time. And what's really going on here? You sit down in a pub with your mate, Your mate turns around and says, so tell me, Lee, why is it that you don't drink alcohol? And you say, okay, well, the reason I don't drink alcohol is, my marriage was falling apart and I could see that alcohol was a part of it. So I decided to stop drinking to save my marriage. It didn't work. But then the more and more I learned about how the tools I used to stop drinking, I realized that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system. And if you want, I can explain how that means to you. But it means I'm going to go a little bit deep into this. So, you know, if you don't want to go deep into it, I understand. Oh, no, go deep into it. So I do, and I explain what's going on. It's very likely during that interaction, going back to the first point we made during this call, which was respect, that the person you're talking to, especially because you've opened yourself up to them, so you're likely as you trust them, or you've taken a very thin slice view of who they are and decided you're going to trust them, that they will treat you with respect as well. So they're very likely to disagree with you in a very respectful way, or, and this happens so often, they will agree with you, okay? They will agree with every single point you're making. And it is very difficult for somebody who drinks alcohol not to agree with everything we're talking about when we lay it out in a very rational and logical way, when we're very confident about what we're saying, when we look really good, when our life is really fantastic, and we're in command of our knowledge. Once we can then convey the reasons why we don't drink alcohol, it is almost impossible for the person we're talking to rebut our philosophy and our talk, okay? So very likely you're going to get people who agree with a large amount of what you're doing, but then they will then go and drink alcohol. And this is what Jeremy Griffith, the evolutionary biologist from Down Under, talks about in his book, The Species of Denial, and calls it the death effect. And we cover it on the life-changing experience. So just be aware that when you are talking to people about this, very likely they suffer from the death effect and they will behave in strange ways in as much as they will agree with everything you're saying, but then drink in front of you, okay? Don't get too wound up about that, because that will happen. Prepare yourself for it, because it can be a very confusing experience for you. And if you turn around and say to them, wow, you just agreed with everything, now you're having a drink, that's a bit contradictory. And now you're running into the realm of conflict. Now you're going to allow their cognitive dissonance to kind of close itself back up again. Because what the death effect really is, it's a protection of that dissonance. So what I mean by that is, if you are someone who wants to drink alcohol, if you want to drink a poison, and your body natural response to that poison is to repel it, then psychologically you need to create ways or belief systems that allow you to drink this powerful poison. And that is the dissonance. So you're able to push away this belief and this understanding that alcohol is really damaging for you. And you'll be able to push it away by relying on mentors and marketing and advertising. It tells you alcohol is really good. So you have a choice, right? You can believe alcohol is really bad. You can believe it's really good. If you keep believing it's really, 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 really good, okay, and just it's a teeny weeny weeny bit bad, then that is like introducing cognitive dissonance, okay? So just be really aware of that. And also, Annie talked a little bit about people offering you drinks when you don't drink as an act of sabotage. I'm sure that happens. I know someone, one person in particular on Strive disagreed with me on this and said, I very definitely, my sisters tried to sabotage my sobriety. But that hasn't been my personal experience, okay? In my personal experience, the only reason that people offer me alcohol is because they think they're doing me a favor. So with alcohol being the dominant, the alcoholism being an invisible, violent, dominant belief system, when you turn around and tell your friend you don't want to drink anymore, their instant reaction is to think that there's something wrong with you. And because they think there's something wrong with you and they care for you, their first reaction is to help you. And what better way to help you to see that there's nothing wrong with you than by telling you that there's nothing wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with you drinking. It is perfectly normal. Yeah, every now and then you get a little bit drunk on a Saturday night and black out and act like a dick. But in general, there's nothing wrong with you. And they will say, everybody is like you. I'm like you, okay? Just have one or two drinks. It will be fine, all right? Now, they're doing that because they care for you and because they love you. They're not doing it because they sabotage you. Okay, let me put a caveat behind that. In my experience, they've been doing it to me because they love me and care for me. They're not trying to sabotage me, okay? And also the death effect comes in here as well, right? So even though Skit, my mate Skit, he's just suffering from a death effect, right? He just, every time he offers me a drink, it's just a death effect. It's just It's just the death effect coupled with a subconscious automatic response created by his brain that says, when we're in a pub, I have to offer Lee a drink. It doesn't say, when we're in a pub, I have to offer, oh, Lee doesn't drink alcohol. Do you want a water? That's not how his mind is primed. So don't always think that when your friends are offering you a drink of alcohol, that they're trying to get one over on you. Very often it could be that they are really trying to help you out. All right. One of the reasons that people don't drink alcohol like you are is fear. Okay. Annie talked about this a little bit, and I think it's really important. Okay. Annie said, and this was hugely inspirational, you are defying expectations. It is fucking hard to stop drinking alcohol, right? And you've stopped drinking it. And for the person who hasn't, that could be quite a difficult thing to wrap their head around, especially if part of the cognitive dissonance is starting to open up a little bit and let some of the air in. So they're starting to think, well, maybe this alcohol lark isn't that great. Because almost everybody who drinks and drinks to a large degree has had an hangover. So all of a sudden, they're looking at Lee Davey and they're thinking, this guy never has an hangover. This guy's got his shit together. He doesn't drink alcohol. And all of a sudden, you're holding a mirror up to their face and they're thinking, he used to drink the same as me. And he has a show where he tells everybody, or he used to tell everybody, that he was an alcoholic. What's going on? Am I this kind of alcoholic? Am I this person? So this fear comes up for them, right? That you're holding a mirror. So now all of a sudden, they really don't want to hear you going on about it. So they'll be like, you know, they'll do everything to stop you talking about it, make you uncomfortable about it, because this mirror is right in front of the face. You are the mirror, right? The other thing that I want you to think about, and this is super important, who the fuck likes to do hard stuff? Look, David Burns always says this. If you want to lose weight, it's not a psychological issue. Just get your running shoes on, go out and run, and then come back and eat salad, fruit, and vegetables for the rest of your life, right? It's not hard, is it, to lose weight? Well, yeah, it is really hard because you don't want to do any of those things. Why? Because it's hard. It's really, really, really hard to run, right? Yeah, people say they get the runner's high and all that kind of stuff. Maybe they do. I don't get a runner's high. I run 2 miles and it's really, really difficult. Every day I run it, it's really, really difficult. I do get the benefits of it later on in the day. I feel a lot better. But in that time, it is hard. It's really difficult. When I go to yoga class, it's hard. It's difficult. Okay? I don't want to do it because it's hard and it's difficult. Afterwards, I feel really good about it. Nobody wants to do hard stuff. Nobody wants to really go for the promotion. Nobody wants to sell their house. Nobody wants to get rid of their husband or their wife who's dragging them down. Nobody wants to travel the world with their kid in the backpack, right? Nobody wants to go and play football at 43 when they're shy of like interacting with different people, all right? Nobody likes to do all the hard stuff. Okay, you might get the odd person who pipes up and does it. You know, this year of facing fear means that I have to face a lot of the hard stuff. And what it shows me is inherently, I don't want to really deal with that kind of stuff. So why on earth would somebody want to listen to you talk about drinking alcohol or not drinking alcohol, when for them to actually do something about it means they've got to stop, which is for them likely to feel like the hardest thing in the world? Well, of course, for some of us, it's not. It can be the easiest thing in the world. That's something that I'm going to talk about in a later podcast. But for most people, the thought of giving up drinking alcohol is as ridiculous as the thought of stopping drinking water. So how do you expect they're going to react if you start talking to them about these things? So that's why you need to be diplomatic. That's why you need to be sensible. That's why you need to be respectful and strategic when you're talking about this stuff, all right? Last but not least, I'm going to talk to you about the resistance, all right? One of the reasons that this person, I can't remember her name, posted the question for Annie Grace. I'm going to do a bit of mind reading here, so that's wrong. Let me stop that. You think about rephrasing that a different way. See, I'm a work in progress, folks. I'm a work in progress. I have a belief that the reason that we tell ourselves not to be a zealot when we're around people who drink alcohol is the resistance talking. I'm a great believer in that. Because I don't have that problem and I don't have any resistance preventing me from being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. Think about this, right? The resistance is everything about our being that prevents us from achieving a goal that is going to be soul-altering for us. And there is no greater soul-altering kind of like a goal than stopping drinking alcohol. It's right up there, right? Because it will change so many facets of your life. Whenever we have such a life-changing goal, resistance will be at its strongest to prevent us from doing that. And it will hit us in so many insidious ways you won't even know. Now, if our resistance, and that's what it is, folks, our resistance is telling us not to speak to people about the fact that we no longer drink alcohol because we are afraid of upsetting the apple cart or being a zealot and that we should keep it a secret. And what is really happening here? The resistance is telling you to shut the fuck up. The resistance is telling you not to help people. The resistance is telling you to be quiet. And what happens when you do that? It accentuates that you are different. And it accentuates that you're different in a bad way. You are different, all right? You are very different. But you're only different because you took on the life-changing experience of being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. You fucking rode the Mount Everest of addictions and you conquered it. And now you're kind of like snowboarding down it. You are different, okay? But if you keep it a secret that you're different, then I believe that resistance is really pushing you towards drinking, okay? You are different. Now, this is going to lead me onto my spiel, and then I'm going to end it, right? I'm going to talk about this difference. I am someone who is not an alcoholic. I am not anonymous. I'm someone who doesn't drink alcohol, and I spend every waking hour help everybody do the same. Think about that. I'm not anonymous. Why am I not anonymous? I'm not anonymous, right? Because I have two kids. And I don't want my two kids growing up thinking that drinking alcohol is normal and pleasurable. The single most decisive reason your children will drink alcohol is because you do. The single most decisive reason your children will drink alcohol is because you do. I cannot say that any louder. I have a 21-month-old daughter who I can see quite clearly because the fog of alcoholism has left my brain. I can see her growing up. I can see how it works. She is going to be the mirror opposite of her parents, her belief systems, her values, her culture, her structure. We will be handcrafting it and delivering it into her subconscious. Yes, she can change it when she's older, but that is going to be very, very difficult. Why do that when we can make a change now? Okay, I am all about creating a movement that saves millions of people. The way to do that is by hitting our children. Okay, so much greater than going to schools to talk about this, we have to walk the walk and talk the talk and be role models. Okay, we cannot be role models if we're being quiet. So why the fuck are we worried about being a zealot? Okay, why are we worried about it? Now, Annie says that in her experience, if you walk your walk and talk your talk, then eventually when people are ready, they'll follow you, right? They'll ask you how you're doing it when they're ready. That is not my personal experience. In my personal experience, I became someone who doesn't drink alcohol and everyone around me didn't want to join me. It doesn't matter how long I stayed around them. Nothing that I did was going to rub off on them because they didn't care. They loved drinking alcohol. What it did do in my decision to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, and by walking my walk and talking my talk and being very loud and vocal about what I do, is it changes my energy. It changes my energy. Everything around me has changed since alcohol. I walk across the road to Coffee One the other day. I'm having a conversation with Joanna from Colombia, and she asks me how many kids I've got. I say, I've got two kids. I've got a 21-month-old. Oh, yeah, I've seen her, she said. I didn't know you had another kid. Yeah, I've got an 18-year-old boy. You have an 18-year-old boy. How old are you? I'm 43. Wow, I would have thought you were 30. Why does she think I'm 30? She thinks I'm 30 because I look 30 because I don't drink alcohol. If I carried on drinking alcohol, I would look 43 or 44 or 45, right? I'm also acting and behaving in a completely different way. There's a bump about me. There's an energy that you cannot see that is attracting like-minded people who have the same energy. So even though, unlike Annie, okay, the people around me didn't react well and suddenly jump on a train and follow my lead as a good role model, I now continually bump into people who have very similar energy to me. So I make new friends, new bonds, new connections, new communities of people who are very much like me. I don't meet people anymore who drink a lot of alcohol. I meet people who don't drink alcohol or who do drink alcohol, and really it's not an issue in their life. Health is really important to them. Yes, they're still drinking a little bit of alcohol, but health is really important to them. Wellness is really important to them. Growth and doing and having service in the world is really important to them. Making a change in the world is really important to them. Okay? And that is because when I meet them, I say, my name is Lee Davey. What do you do for a living? I don't tell them I write poker articles. I say I help people become people who don't drink alcohol for a living. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, do you want me to tell you more about it? Oh, yes, please. And I talk about it. Okay? And hopefully, if you implement all of the advice and just take on some of the inspirations that I've been talking about here, it will help you, right? It will help you to be able to turn around and say, yes, I want to fucking talk about this, because there will be people who listen to Annie's podcast and there will be people who listen to this, both on this term of being a zealot, and you'll fall into three camps. Number one camp, I don't really want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I feel uncomfortable talking about it and I don't want to upset people, right? Annie gave you a lot of great advice on how to manage that. Go listen to her podcast on that. Then there'll be a lot of people who doesn't really know what to do. They're not sure whether to shout from the rooftops or not. All right. Well, you can listen to both of these podcasts. Then there are people who would have listened to Annie's podcast and who would have said, no, fuck that. I want to talk about it. And I want to know that there are other people in the world who are talking about it, because I don't want to be the only one in the world talking about it. I don't want to feel like I'm making a mistake here. Well, you're not making a mistake, and you're not the only person who talks about it, because I don't stop talking about it. And if someone comes to me and says, should I talk about it or not? I'm going to be like, yeah, talk about it as often as you can. But here's some structure around how best to do that, okay? So for those of you who want to talk about it, we're here. I want to leave you with a story, and I'll let you go. Several years ago, I was working in Wembley Stadium at a poker tournament called the International Stadiums Poker Tour. During a break in that event, I went looking for a restaurant and I sat down and had a salad and some water, and I was all on my own. There was nobody there, right, in this restaurant. And this kid came and sat opposite me, and his name was Fabian Gruber. He was a photographer that was working at the event. And he sat down, quite a podgy German fella, and he always used to wear this beanie, always used to wear this hat, right? And it was sweltering all that week at Wembley. But, you know, Fabian would always have this beanie on his hat. And Fabian, over dinner, sat down and said to me, Lee, tell me more about your decision not to drink alcohol. Because I drink alcohol. I'm not really comfortable about it. But more important than that, it's bothering me. I smoke a lot of weed. And it's really affecting my life. And I see you've got your shit together. And I would really welcome, you know, as we have dinner together, like if you could talk to me about it a little bit. And I spent the next 20, 30 minutes telling him my story, talking about how much I love life and how much I fucking hate alcohol, right? And I didn't hold back. I didn't use any of these skills and tricks and techniques that I just told you. I just fucking laid it out for him. Several years later, I'm at a poker tournament and I bump into Fabian. And I was like, holy shit. He didn't have a beanie on. He had his hair all done immaculately. His face and his cheekbones were chiseled. He looked handsome. He looked like a Calvin Klein model. And I turned and I said to him, holy shit, Fabian, what has happened? And he said, that's nothing. Have a look at this. And he got his phone out and he showed me a before and after photograph of him in his shorts. I couldn't believe it. He'd gone from this like kind of like podgy fella to what looked like a world-class bodybuilder. There wasn't an inch of fat on him, and he was cut like with his muscles shown, like you wouldn't believe. And I said to him, Fabian, how on earth did you manage to do that? And he turned around and said to me, Lee, you helped me do that. He said, do you remember that conversation we had in Wembley? And I said, When? And he said, the dinner. I said, oh, when you asked me about how to quit alcohol. He said, yeah. He said, I went home after that event and I couldn't get your voice out of my head. And then I decided that I wasn't going to drink again. I decided I was going to lead a predominantly plant-based diet like you. And I decided that I was going to work out. And this is the end product. I'm doing really good in my photography business right now. I'm creating an online training course to help other people become like me. And I fucking love life. And I just want to say to you, thank you very much for kind of helping me or pushing me or setting me up on the road to changing my life. Now, I didn't change that kid's life. I don't change anybody's life at the Trooper Alcohol. Everybody does the work themselves, right? I'm just here to be a guide. But what kind of guide would I have been if I would have said to Fabian on that day, now, I don't really want to talk about it. Let's talk about poker. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I'm someone who doesn't drink alcohol and I help everybody else in the world do exactly the same. Thank you very much for listening.